Welcome to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast, brought to you by the Wealthy Speaker School. This is the podcast dedicated to people who want to speak more as a way to build their income and grow their business. Well, welcome everyone to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Atkinson. Today, we are talking about growing your business. Such a fun subject. My guest expert is Chris Plackey. Welcome, Chris.
Hello, welcome to me.
I'm so happy that you're here with us today. Now, I've always wanted to pronounce your last name Plachey. I think that's maybe the like Canadian spin to it.
I love it.
And yes. You don't mind that. That's kind of nice.
I sound incredibly interesting with that pronunciation.
Okay, Chris Plachey it is. Now, I know you as a former client of mine, and you've taken a little pause from speaking in the last year, so I'm going to ask you about that here in a second. But I've gotten acquainted with your work as a member of Self-Coaching Scholars as well, myself, over a year now. Chris, tell everybody about your business as it exists today, and then we'll talk about your reinvention.
Okay. Well, I am an executive coach, and I coach female entrepreneurs on the human capital part of their business. So as businesses grow and we go from being a solopreneur to an entrepreneur and we have to hire people, all of us run into that moment where we realize people don't do things the way we want them to. And we kind of lose our minds. And I really help women who are really at that place where they're generating enough revenue. They have a very good working business model, but they have to scale, and they have to scale by getting work done through others. And they don't have the management experience or the practices in place to really scale through others. So I help women with all of those pieces and parts, hiring and firing, managing, holding people accountable.
Beautiful.
You know, it's not terribly sexy, but it's crucial.
really needed. And one of the things that Brooke School has helped me understand is, you know, I've talked about picking a lane for years, but you all go deep into a lane. I mean, there are people who are very, very specific about who they serve. And you, in your own reinvention, have shed a lot. Let's talk about kind of where you were. I don't know, when we worked together, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, that was you're in a totally different place than where you are today. Talk about what you've had to shed to get to where you are today, to that specificity that you just told us about.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. And I, it's interesting because I was so reluctant and resistant to exactly what you're talking about for years. And Brooke Castillo, who you're mentioning, is one of my best girlfriends, and she would just tell me, and I would just resist. So when I started my business in 2012, I launched as a consultant coach. I had my certification as a coach. The year after I started my business, I became master certified with Life Coach School. But I really was more in the consultant space, which is what I think a lot of people do that probably even listen to this podcast. They're speakers. And we tend to, when we're in, when we run a business like that, we respond to our client, which means the client says, hey, can you come give a presentation on this?
Fill in the blank.
Yes. And you figure out how to do it, right?
Right.
And there isn't anything wrong with that business model. It keeps you pretty much very solopreneur, and it keeps you very reactive to your client, which is, in my case, right, which I'm sure is true for a lot of people that you know, a lot of RFPs, a lot of submitting of proposals, a lot of lag time in terms of generating revenue, and a lot of business relationships, a lot of business marketing, all those, or, you know, networking, that kind of work.
Right.
And one of the things that I, after 7 years, this is really where I kind of was like, okay, wait, what's happening? I was just, I hadn't really grasped a way to generate consistent revenue without being dependent on that whole process, right? Which is, of course, driven by the client.
You didn't want to be reactive anymore.
No.
You wanted to take control and be the driver of your business and scale it. I think being reactionary, maybe you hit a ceiling, don't you?
Solopreneur,
revenue-wise.
You only really hustle your way to about $800K-$900K. Mm-hmm. And then you have to have something that's scalable that's outside of just you, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you, obviously people can continue to raise your prices, but you eventually price yourself even to a point that you're not going to continue to generate at the level that you might want for your business.
And you just threw in $800K-$900K, which most people that are listening in would be like, you know, I could probably go for that.
Yeah, but do you know how hard you have to work to make $800,000 and just as yourself?
Just by yourself.
How many airplanes,
exactly.
Especially the speakers, right? How many freaking mm-hmm. airplanes are you on a year?
Exactly.
And that's not counting your downtime. Like, there's just so much in that space that I didn't even realize, because it's such a common business model. And again, there's nothing wrong with it. It just, I reached a point after being in business for a while that I wanted to be able to have sustainable revenue and build on the skills that I had. And I had, luckily, just started coaching some female entrepreneurs sort of by happenstance. It kind of fell in my net, you know, mm-hmm. so to speak. And I loved them. I just fell in love with the challenges that they were having and how to help them. And so that's where we really fine-tuned this niche in a mastermind that I was in all last year with Brooke mm-hmm. and several other wonderful women. And so part of that process,
the Millionaires Mastermind, yes. I want everybody to hear the name of that.
Yes.
And so you shed in order to grow. And I
for
think
sure.
that's something that is so fascinating.
Yeah.
That you got more and more specific about your business model. Now, if you were coming to me as a speaker and you said, I only want to help this particular group of women, I would say from a speaking standpoint, getting paid, that may feel a little limited. But you took the last year off of speaking in order to get this foundation in place for yourself in order to scale beyond.
Yeah.
And now you're actually starting to see groups coming to you, and they yes. are these women yes. that are very specific in the niche. So I'm starting to kind of adjust my own beliefs about what's even possible in speaking. Just because of what I've learned here in terms of really drilling down on your target market.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I agree with you. That's always been the argument, right? Is you don't want to get too narrow because then you limit your opportunities. But I actually now stand very confidently in front of you to say that's actually just not the truth. Mm-hmm. The clearer you get, the more specific you are, the easier it is for the people who you want to work with and who need you to find you. It's not a distraction to have to sift through, right? So sure, I might be more finite, but now the women who do what I do, who need what I do, mm-hmm. it's like a laser points yeah. right on me.
You're the
right?
only game in town, probably exactly. for them. Who
yeah, and honestly, that's very true now. That's what mm-hmm. I hear from people is
I couldn't
didn't know
find
people,
anybody.
Yeah, I didn't know people like you existed.
Right, right. So, okay. So let's go back to the speaking for a second. Mm-hmm. And you're going to use speaking probably as a rainmaker and then maybe just to add some gravy on top of the existing business model, because your main business model, I know you're not going to yeah. only trade your time for money in terms of coaching, because that's just not the model that we're living in with self-coaching scholars. So talk about how do you get your clients? What is your process and your funnel? And then where is your goal to get them to?
My current clients, not speaking, mm-hmm. right?
Right. Okay, yeah. Right. So, we're kind of setting speaking aside a little bit here.
My business model is a couple different funnels, if you will. So I have Facebook ads that I run where mm-hmm. I have a value add that I offer people. Right now I have a kind of a free mini course for female entrepreneurs on the 5 key relationships you need to develop to be successful.
So you have a strong magnet kind of bringing them in, and the Facebook ads would advertise that magnet. And then you would have probably, I suspect you're spending a fair amount of money every month on Facebook ads.
Yeah,
is that right?
No, I have. And then it just every month is a little different.
You adjust.
So if I try a new opt-in, I scale it. Mm-hmm. We see if it works, and then we throw money into it if it's effective and see if it generates the volume that we're looking for.
Right. Okay.
The other kind of passive funnel that I have is I created Brooke and I co-created an online course for entrepreneurial management. And so a lot of people are taking that course and realizing they'd like to work with me more specifically on the tactical part of the course, right? The course is kind of high level.
Beautiful.
So that's also another source of lead flow. And then I also have a podcast.
Okay. So we're going to put links to all of those into our show notes. What's your podcast called?
It's called How to Lead for Female Entrepreneurs.
I love that. That is so specific. Mm-hmm. How could you get it wrong?
I do have men that listen.
Yeah, well, so that's cool.
I have men, and it's cute because every now and then I'll get an email from a guy. In fact, one of my current clients, he emailed me and said, "Are the boys allowed?" They invited. Of course they are, right?
So, yes. And we want to, you know, that this podcast is really for everybody.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that so much of your work is now steeped in this thought model process. I used to think that mindset was kind of, you know, a percentage of mm-hmm. the whole thing of entrepreneurism. And I now believe that mindset is like everything. Mm-hmm. And so I have never felt that I have done good justice to explaining the thought model to my listeners. So please, Chris, will you take a stab at it and see? You're so steeped in it that I'm thinking you're going to be a lot better at it than I am.
Well, I should tell you, this is an interesting thing. I didn't know that's what you wanted to talk about today. So I'm so thrilled that you do, because I have a little bit of a story, if you'll indulge me.
Please.
On how this showed up for me. So in 2005, I signed up for a course that was called If I'm So Smart, Why Can't I Lose Weight? And it was conducted by Brooke here in my community, because she and I lived in the same town. And at the time, I was director of a big team, a corporate team. And so I took this day-long course, which was the most powerful thing I've ever had. At the time, Brooke taught the thought model, but she called them limited beliefs is what her original language was.
Right.
And I hired her as a personal coach after that. But then everything I heard her teach, I realized applied to managers. And I went back to work and started hearing all of my managers say things like, "She's so lazy. Nobody wants to work hard anymore. Everybody's trying to get it right." And all these thoughts they had about their employees.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, this is so powerful, that how you're thinking about your employees is affecting how you're performing with your employees. And so I started teaching my managers what the thought model was, and I started coaching them using the thought model. Well, that grew into, honestly, what ended up being, over the course of the next 5 years, a corporate movement in the company that I worked in with about 20,000 employees.
Beautiful.
And ultimately, it led to me being able to write my own job description, and I created a senior director position that oversaw performance coaching for 4,000 person leadership team. And the thought model was at the heart of the learning.
Wow.
And I wrote my first book, which is called Change Your Think. And it's for managers, about how the thoughts that we think affect how we lead and manage. And so I'm happy to, I mean, I could talk about this for 2 hours, because until you understand how the most powerful performance tool you have, which is your mind, is constantly directing your results, you will always end up somewhere and think it's the result of your circumstances. And it isn't. Every result that you have in your life is a result of the thoughts that you think.
That is, what I think, so this is interesting, that my clients and my listeners and my students at the Wealthy Speaker School, I think that they hear about this and they think, oh yeah, that's nice. I know that.
That makes sense. Well, let's look at the mechanics, right?
Yeah.
So things happen in the world every day that you can't control, right? The weather, the traffic, what somebody puts on Twitter, whether or not a client responds to you, these are uncontrollables. And in fact, a lot of our life is completely out of our control.
Right.
Majority of it.
Your plane is going to be delayed and you're going to miss a speaking engagement. That's exactly. And we call that the C line. That's a circumstance.
Exactly. It's a total circumstance. But then what happens is we define our circumstances in our brain. So we could use the plane is delayed as a perfect example, right? So mm-hmm. then I have all these thoughts. I'm going to lose this job. They're going to think I'm a flake. I'm letting people down. This is the worst thing that's ever happened. Or thank God I didn't even want to go to that event. Right?
We don't know. Who knows what the thought is?
Yeah, it's the thoughts that you think. So that we think that's automatic. Mm-hmm. What we say a lot, and what I say to my clients a lot, is you just think you're reporting the news to me. You're just telling me your thoughts. The only thing is true is that your plane was delayed. Now, how you decide to think about that will trigger how you feel. So if you think this is the worst thing that's ever happened, you're going to feel mortified, embarrassed, awful. Shame, fear, anger, rage,
stressed.
So the thought that you think triggers the emotion, the feeling. The feeling does not come from the circumstance. So flights being delayed does not automatically make everybody feel the same way.
Right.
Flights being delayed is then defined in everyone's mind, which triggers how people feel. Mm-hmm. Then how you feel triggers your behavior. So if you're feeling anger, you yell at the ticket agent. You call everybody you know. You freak out. You complain to the passenger sitting next to you. Right? What is your actual action based on how you feel? Mm-hmm. And then what's the result that you get? This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. The result that you're experiencing at that moment is how awful it is.
It's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah. And so, or if you change your thought, it could be, I really can't do much about a plane.
We can decide to think there's nothing I can do. So what can I do instead?
Right.
And then we think I'm going to be productive. So we feel focused and we open up our laptop and we write a blog or we email clients that we haven't talked to yet, or we book our next speaking engagement.
Right.
Or we get
we're on the phone with the client trying to arrange for another speaker, a backup just in case or whatever it might be. And in that moment, we have a choice. And I think it's the choice part. I think people know that they have a choice. I just don't think maybe it's as conscious as it could be. And that's what I'm trying to instill that in my clients. But I have never really felt like I've done it as good a justice to just explain it the way you've done. Okay, so let's run another scenario just to kind of drive this point mm-hmm. home. And then we'll move on to a couple of other things. The circumstance is I didn't get that speaking engagement that I really, really wanted.
The circumstance, that's a thought. The circumstance is they didn't.
Okay. They didn't hire me. Okay. So circumstance.
Or, and you could even take it even further. I got an email that said, no, thank you.
Okay. So the no, thank you email came in.
Is the circumstance.
Let's go from there.
So the thoughts that we potentially have about that are what?
Yeah.
What do people think?
It could be, oh my gosh, I'm no good. Mm-hmm. This is never going to work. Mm-hmm. I suck. Mm-hmm. I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm.
So then how do people feel when they think I'm suck and I'm not good enough? How do you feel when you think that thought, Jane?
Depressed. And upset, and then maybe sometimes envious over the person who did get it. Okay, you're right. See, this is why I need your help.
Yeah, different thoughts going to trigger envy, right?
Right.
Oh, they're better than me.
Yeah. They chose someone else, could be the thought. No thank you is the email. The thought is, oh my gosh, they chose someone else. Who's better than me? Maybe you know the person's.
Yeah,
maybe
they always beat me.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I had their business. Right. So now we move down a different path, which is envy.
Envy.
We could go down one path, which is poor me, or we could go down another path, which is envy.
Well, and this one's interesting. I was coaching someone recently who, it wasn't a speaking issue, but it was a competitor in her market. And so the C line was, there's a person who has the same business as me. The thought is he's doing a better job than me. The feeling was jealous and resentful, I think is probably. And so then, do you know what she spent her A line? Her action?
Doing what?
Stalking him.
Ah, interesting.
Watching everything he does online, watching what, reading his emails, getting on his mailing list, and like not from a constructive, like, ooh, maybe I could learn from this guy,
right,
but from
right.
like, what's he doing? And he's right. And I'm like, I asked her, I said, how much time have you wasted serving this jealousy of yours? Because you think he's better than you, right? So her result, of course, is that she's finding all this evidence that he's better than her. So if you use your speaker model, they have a better business than I do. You feel jealous or envious. You have to be honest about what you do in your A line there. Some people like stalk other people. Some people talk badly about them. Right? They call other people and they complain.
Exactly. They're not even as good as me. And they try to.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Or they ignore the whole thing and they hide. You know what I love to do when someone is making more money than me and doing something better than I am in my brain, other than them in my industry? I like to research and learn.
What are they doing?
What are they doing? Like, I don't want to be them, but
you know what I do?
Than I do?
I invite them on my podcast.
Sure, why not?
If they're likable, I would invite them on my podcast.
Which is a thought.
Yeah, if they're likable, yeah, that's a thought. But I want to go through this because we really haven't clearly identified circumstances, the C line, T, the thought line is a T.
The F is your feeling.
Feeling that's resulting from that thought. And then we go into action, which is your A line, and then R, which is your results line.
And your result always feeds your original thought. That's why we call it a negative spin cycle, right? So if I believe that other people are better than me and I feel jealous, I feel sad, I feel inadequate, then we have to look at what our actual action is. And in most cases, it's a negative action, right? It's destructive. And
not helpful.
And so then the result is, yes, other people have a better business than you. In your mind, we're not talking about an objective assessment here.
Right, right.
You're just going to always find evidence that other people are better than you. It's such a useless way to think.
So let's switch it around to circumstances. You get a no thank you email. What could be your thought right then? And this may have happened to you back when you were working towards more speaking engagements. What would be your thought?
Well, I have this thought. I have the invitation for this thought every time I meet with a potential client and they say no.
Okay.
Right? It's the same thing.
And so what is your response to no thank you?
The first thing I want you to understand from my perspective, if you're in the business of selling, which every single one of your clients, if they are people listening, if they want to be speakers,
they should be.
Recognize that you're selling.
Yes.
If you don't recognize that, you have some thought work to do.
We have another episode that we might need to do on that one. Yeah. Okay.
You are selling something. You're marketing yourself and you're selling it. So,
right.
Or your experience that you offer. So I always have, nobody is my client. So when they say no, that they weren't ever mine. It's not like they, does that make sense? Like, so I don't have this kind of attachment to them. So my opportunity when I meet with people is to see if I want to work with them.
Right.
And if they don't want to work with me and I thought I wanted to work with them, then I always am just like, oh, that's too bad for them. Like I genuinely feel badly for them.
That's good. Like, okay.
Oh, no. You're confused. You're confused. We're going to be able to make such, I'm sorry. And so then I move along.
Yeah.
I don't chase. The, I think actually it was Brooke who told me this years ago, but it's just been a mantra for me. The prize never chases.
The prize never chases.
So you don't chase people in your brain, and you don't chase people in writing. Like, if they say no to me, I get it.
I love that. And that is my motto this year. We are moving into a mode rather than pushing our marketing out.
Right.
Our goal is to be attracting mm-hmm. right buyers. We really right. just want to be a magnet to attract the right buyers. I love the prize never chases.
Prize never chases.
That's so good. Okay. So if somebody says, no, thank you, email, the thought might be, okay, well, maybe next time. I wasn't the right fit this time, or we weren't the right fit for each other. There was a book back when I was dating. I didn't get married until I was relatively old. And the book was called He's Just Not That Into You. And it was so liberating. And I've kind of taken the same approach to business. I've even written some posts about speakers bureaus when they're just not that into you. Because I really think that it takes you feeling like it's personal out of it.
It's
not about you. It's that you're just not the right match at this moment in time.
And it isn't even about you. You know,
it really isn't.
It's true for marketing. It's true. So let's just take that one step further, right? You submit a proposal and they say no.
Mm-hmm.
If you spend any ounce of time thinking they don't want me, you're losing the point. What I would say is, what in this message, it could be your copy. It could be how you wrote the proposal. It could be the title of the speech that you wrote. Like, that's where the work is.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to fail so many times. To be, and the willingness, right? We talk about that in Self-Coaching Scholars. I know that's part of Brooke's messaging, right? Like 100 mm-hmm. fails. Are you willing to fail 100 times at something because you're so committed to getting the result you want?
That's a really excellent question for a lot of people. I have someone who is new to the school. We have the Wealthy Speaker School, by the way, mm-hmm. which I looked at everything that Brooke was doing in Self-Coaching Scholars. And I love that she just says, here's my stuff, you guys. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing this, 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 and this, and this. And I took all of the parts that I thought would really work for us, and I've adopted them. And the school is going fabulously. I'm so excited about it. But we had a new member, I think it was just this morning, say, I'm just getting started and I've realized that this is going to be a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And I talk a little bit more about 100 fails.
Well, I mean, I think all of us are in this space, right? It doesn't matter what you do. If you believe, if you have said to your friend today, I'm going to come visit you. You guys have booked a trip and you're going to fly to Phoenix to go mm-hmm. visit your friend.
Mm-hmm.
Been on the books for a couple months. But then you get to the airport and your plane's delayed. Do you call your friend and say, forget it, I'm not coming? And then you get on the plane
mm-hmm.
and they say, oh, we're really sorry, but we have to redirect you to Tucson because of a storm in Phoenix. Do you just say, forget it, I'm going back home?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to Tucson, you have to rent a car, and they only have a stick shift. You have to drive from Tucson to Phoenix with a stick shift. Do you say, forget it, I'm going back home? The point is, no, because you've agreed to go visit your friend. You are committed to the result. Are you that committed to the result that you want? I have a lot of clients who tell me, I want to make this much money. I want to have this many people I help. I want to put this thing in the world, right?
Right,
I coach
right.
women who are coaches. I coach women who are service providers and product providers. You can always tell the tolerance for failure by their level of commitment to a result, right?
That's because so interesting.
Because if you really believe it's done, then it does it. Oh, oops. Oh, there must be some, oh, somebody must be confused. I was supposed to get that speaking engagement. I wonder, I'm confused. Maybe I should apply for 12 more speaking engagements
right.
instead of just 9. But are you committed, or do you know right. in your heart that that is exactly the result you're going to achieve? I believe that what I do for female entrepreneurs, I believe every single woman that has a business should learn what I have to teach them, because there are women, there are 11 million female entrepreneurs on the planet right now, and only 1% of them are making more than $1 million.
Wow.
And the reason, the biggest reason I know that they aren't is because they quit because it's hard to manage people. That is ultimately, most people come to me and they're like, should I just sell this thing? How do I get out of here? How do I get out of this hell I'm in because of the people that I have to manage?
Right.
And I don't want them to quit. So I'm that committed to that result. Are you that committed? Whatever your topic is that you speak about, that you're excited about, that you want to share in the world, are you that committed to right. fail 100 times?
Beautiful. I think I was lucky because I cut my teeth on other people's businesses. I used to be, I started out as an agent for speakers. And so I got to see different business mm-hmm. models as I grew. And I worked for a speakers bureau in Dallas that ultimately went bankrupt because of poor decisions, I assume. And so it's really interesting to me. And so what I have been learning, so I'm also a student of Strategic Coach and Dan Sullivan, who I've heard Brooke talk about. So my worlds have collided kind of all around me several times. And for 7 years, I've been with Strategic Coach. And so it used to be that I knew how to run a speaking business, and now I know how to run a business. Let's talk about what the commitment is going to need to be to get to your first 100K. And then I want to talk about the difference in getting to 1 million. Mm-hmm. There's a whole different kind of set of situations that have to be in place in order to get 2 million. So let's talk about that first 100K and what you think the commitment might be. You could stay a solopreneur at that level and go around and speak and do your business. What are some of the foundations that you might want to have in place?
Well, I think it's the hardest to earn your first 100K. I think that is honestly a milestone for so many people that, and it's a barrier because of the way that people think. A first 100K is when you have to literally strip down the way that you think about who you are and what you're capable of, and all of the limiting thoughts you've had about money and self-worth, and really step into owning what you believe you are on the planet to do, and that it's valuable and that it's worth money.
Wow. That's so interesting you're saying that, because I've been doing all of that same work to get to the $1 million mark. Yeah. And so I think that it's very interesting that in order to even get to the first 100K that you would say that.
I think I have this term that I use for some of my clients that I call revenue forward, which means that some people come out of the gate and they do pretty well mm-hmm. right away. They have a good network. They have a really enticing product. And so they are able to generate a lot of revenue quickly.
Right.
And then what happens is they hit the $1 million mark, and they have to scale. They can't keep it up. They're exhausted. They're working 80-hour weeks. They have to start to figure out how to get work done through their business. They have to have a business model that has to do more with managing a business than just selling.
Trading their time for money.
Exactly. And if they didn't do the work at the beginning, it catches up to them now, right? Mm-hmm. So because what I would say about from 100K to 1 million, if you're like in a perfect world, if you did the work at 100K, then the whole rest of that journey is about scalability.
Right.
It's asking yourselves questions like, yes, this works today, but could this work if I had 200 people I was working with versus just 3 this month? Is what I'm putting in place a scalable model? The sooner you start asking yourself that question, the easier it is to continue to generate revenue into a model that is accepting of it, is ready for it. And, I think that once you're at about 200,000 to 300,000, you should have at least one person that you're managing. Mm-hmm. You have to start to cut your teeth and learn how to manage, how to hire, how to manage, how to hold people accountable, how to set goals, how to have expectations, how to fire.
And I want to do a plug for the product that you did with Brooke on that. Tell everybody what it's called again.
It's called Entrepreneurial Management, and it's a 26-module video course. And it's
and anybody can buy that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's okay. Right on the Life Coach School website.
That's really good. And we'll put a link to it if you'll send that over to me. I'd also love you to send over to me if you have like a thought model worksheet. Mm-hmm. With the CTFAR on it. I would love to be able to share that with folks as well. Interesting. Okay. So once you get to about 200 to 300, then you're probably going to see the need for team. Now, I encourage team starting to get used to hiring a VA, even on the smallest project, like let's outsource the research end of building a list.
Right.
You know, we don't need to build the list ourselves. Let's pay a few $100 and have somebody come back to us with a few hundred names so that we can, you know, take that part out of the equation. So I like to see people starting to hire fairly early on, but now I recognize that you really need to step into the role of leader in your business at a certain level. Do you think that's around the 200 to 300K level?
I think that's, it just depends on your business model, right? Because some people have very complex models, even at 100K, where they need a lot more hands. Mm-hmm. I like a nice profit margin. So I think you need to be thoughtful about your payroll and how many people you have based on what you want, what you're doing your business for in the world. Right. And I think a lot of us, you know, one of the philosophies I really follow is the profit first model by Michael Michalowicz. Mm-hmm. It's an exceptional book and it's an exceptional philosophy for entrepreneurs so that you don't get into what he calls entrepreneurial poverty, where you might have a nice revenue line, but you have such poor money management and business management that you're not really
making anything. And one of the things I learned last year from Self-Coaching Scholars was not that I wanted to, I already knew how to make money. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to learn how to keep money with me. So I've been watching this account that I've been kind of building into and really trying to grow something so that I could actually physically see some evidence that I was doing good work over here. You know, sometimes I would just go and buy, you know, a fancy fridge or something just to say I had something to show for it.
Right.
Don't you find that the more you make, the more you spend can
offer.
It sounds like you're really good at keeping your eye on the bottom line that way.
Well, it's part of my learning too, right? Because it's part of the relationship change that we have to go through from solopreneur to entrepreneur is when we're a solopreneur, we are the business. There's no separation.
Right.
But as we transition from solopreneur to entrepreneur, we have to actually recognize that the business is its own entity and it sits next to us and we're the custodian of the business. But the business isn't ours there just to use as we like. And in fact, I think if a lot of entrepreneurs or, you know, people who are business owners asked their business how it felt, how it would describe it, the relationship you have with it, a lot of the businesses would say, well, she sort of ignores me until she needs something, right? She keeps all my money, so I can't reinvest in myself.
Oh, interesting. And,
you know, it's a switch. And again, that's that difference between 100K and a million is now the business is here. When I, you know, I'll look at my CFO, we're just meeting right before this podcast. And that's the business that we look at. We don't look at me.
Right. You're completely separate from it. And the goal is to get to the point where you have a self-managed company.
Yeah.
And when you are only trading your time for money, this is why we want to see people develop things outside of themselves, whether it be online courses. And some speakers would just love to have a little bit more coaching revenue so that they're filling in time in between speeches, right? Mm-hmm. There's, you know, but that's still trading time for money. So how have you gone one to many? Do you have a program that starts in levels? Do you have like
a group?
I really
only have a couple of ways that people can work with me.
Okay.
I have a program called the Founders Lab for female entrepreneurs. So it's group coaching. And I use that word a little cautiously because I have three small groups. They don't really have more than 10 or 12 people at any time.
Okay.
We meet weekly, and it's called the lab because it's about applying the tools that I provide through entrepreneurial management. So a lot of people take entrepreneurial management and then they come into my founder's lab because they want to actually do the program, right?
The work. Okay.
And they need somebody to kind of coach them through because as soon as you start making changes like that, your brain falls apart. And then I do some high-end one-on-one VIP coaching.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. So the Founders Lab for female entrepreneurs, that could be, you could have three on the go. You could have more than three on the go if you wanted to.
Yeah, right? I may eventually do that. I like keeping things. My goal is a simple model that's, I want to continue to have an intimate connection and relationship with the people that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you know, and there's some people have huge, huge business
networks.
I
like your model because that doesn't have a massive complexity to it.
Yeah, no, simple.
Right? You're really after something that's simple and you really want to be able to know the people that are coming through. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. Well, we've covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Chris. Chris Plache. Chris Bakke.
I'll have to tell my husband.
Yes. You tell him that you've got a sexy French name now.
Yeah.
And I really have loved everything. So, the founders, if somebody were coming out of this call and thought, oh, I'd really like to get to know more, the best starting place is probably the course. Am I right? Entrepreneurial management?
Yeah, you could do a couple things. The course is on the Life Coach School for sure.
Okay, we'll put
a
link to that.
If you ended up in the Founders Lab with me, you actually get that course.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, they could go straight there then. Okay.
Yeah, if somebody's thinking, oh, maybe I might want to talk to you. I do one-on-one consults with all of my new clients. So if that's the case, I would just direct people to my website to book in a consult.
Yeah. Fantastic. And I have learned so much from Brooke's teachings I really lean into the business side of what she's offered. And I've spent extra money and gotten other business courses that she's done and just thought, oh, wow, this was so good. I should have really done this 10 years ago in my business.
Well, you know what's interesting though, what I'll say about that, because Brooke and I, like I said, have known each other a long time, and it was just in the last 5 years that, you know, she's gone from, you know, less than a million to now, I think she's finishing at just over 26 this year.
Mm-hmm. 26 million people.
The way that we were able to do the EM program is literally every day, with limited exception for the last 4 years, she and I have been on the phone as she's been trying to figure out how to build a management practice in her company that has afforded her the opportunity to scale. So the EM program it's like, I've said in the past, I feel like it's almost like our love letter to other clients because we did this hard work together. She would call me and say, holy crap, what do I do?
Yeah, I'm in the middle of a hiring nightmare and those types of things. She's really spoken a lot on our podcast about all of the mistakes that she's made along the way to 26 million.
Yeah. So there's a lot of blood and sweat and tears and
tears.
And being mad at people that got to the point where this content was really, really so powerful and so easy to digest. And so that's certainly what we hear is people just feel like, you know, are you in the room with me? Because it's exactly what I was thinking today.
Well, it's beautiful. It's beautiful to see where you've come, Chris, because back when we worked together, you probably talked about this as something you were doing, and I really didn't know that much about it. So I love seeing the work that you've done and how you've evolved your own business to become this amazing, thriving entrepreneur. So congratulations. And just now, you're starting to build your speaking business back up again.
I was telling you, I've had two invitations, one to be a keynote and one to be a speaker again at a large conference that I used to do every year. And so I'm excited actually about doing a few, but I'm going to be very strategic, right?
Yes. Cherry pick.
Yeah. And I think, you know, but I spoke actually at Brooks Mastermind a couple of months ago, and then I just taught again last week. And I haven't done it. And so it was...
get the rust off.
I just love it. I love speaking. You and I used to talk about this. It is a superpower. So for me, I was happy to kind of be like, oh yeah, this is actually something I should probably be
adding. You should probably do it a little bit more, a little more consciously. But I like that you got your foundation in place first. Yeah. With your coaching and your groups, now you have like a solid revenue that you could do anything you want.
Right.
And that gives you the ability to take the speeches that are going to be the best rainmakers for those two events. Mm-hmm. Are you going to go and do like a primarily male conference? No, because that's not going to feed your other two revenue streams. And I just think that that's genius. Now, I really want to share some pain before we leave here, that you had to give up your old podcast. And sometimes the pain of shedding the old in order to really narrow down the lane can be, and we just came upon our 150th episode, and basically throw away 150 of your old podcasts. How painful was that?
It was terrible. And it was a conversation that I had to have with Brooke probably for 4 or 5 months. She just kept saying, you got to take it down. You got to take it down. Because I used to do a podcast that was more focused on management. So it was much more generalized. It wasn't as specific.
And it was money in the water for people who might stumble across you. They know you now as that, and they're going to call you for that, and that's not what you do. So it's not helpful to do a podcast that isn't in line with your ultimate mission.
No, and it's confusing.
For the buyer.
So even at the beginning of last year, I was still getting, you know, our water district. Can you please come, you know, be the...
No,
I can't. Negotiator for our board of directors meeting. Can you please come present to a city for a leadership program?
And how tempting was it to take that business because it was revenue? Well, I might as well just, you know, it's 2 hours from my house and it's, you know, $5,000. I should just go and do it. Talk about what did you put in the T-line? What was your thought? The circumstance was you had a deal on the table. What was your thought that allowed you to walk away from income like that? What was the thought you used?
Well, two, I don't do that anymore. And B, it's not useful. It's not a good use of my time. To go make $5,000 doing a presentation for a city, right? I would much rather spend that 4 hours, that 6 hours talking to, recording podcasts, writing emails, trying to connect with the woman that I know, because one client will be well more than that 5K. So it's just such a better way, much better use of my time. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners have felt this way. Like, I just really got to the point, Jane, where I felt like I was the talent. How does this feel when I say out loud? Like, I felt like I felt very used. And I didn't feel like I was getting to really be who I needed to be to make the change I wanted to change for my clients. And it was like these people need a speaker. And you were like the plug for the moment.
Yeah.
And so, and then because I was such a chameleon in terms of topic, it just I started to feel like the the talent. I don't know what a better way to say that.
Yeah.
So now
we could call it prostitution. I think that's maybe a little too far, but
it's an extreme.
It's a little extreme, but you know, it doesn't feel good to do things, and it doesn't support your brand when you do things that are off lane.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what we're going to call this podcast yet, but
A chat with Chris
about your thoughts. I really, really am so grateful for you. And I'm excited that we've circled back into each other's lives.
Yes.
And I hope that we'll be able to keep in touch. And I want to say thank you so much for being on the show, Chris Plaché.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And if you're listening, we just sent out an email, and so many of you were so sweet to give us a review and a rating on iTunes and wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you so much for all of you who did that. I really, really appreciate even the people who couldn't figure it out. I appreciate the effort. Sometimes iTunes is not the easiest to find your way to the ratings and review section, but thank you so much for doing that. And with that, we will say, see you soon, Wealthy Speakers. Bye for now, everyone. Hey, thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed our show, you'll want to come and visit us at the Wealthy Speakers School, where we provide a proven roadmap for building your dream business. Go to wealthyspeakerschool.com. And for show notes for today's podcast, head on over to speakerlauncher.com and click on podcast. I'll see you soon, Wealthy Speakers.